So I'd like to welcome everyone here to the Court of Appeals, the Second Court of Appeals. We have one case set for oral argument this afternoon. I understand that the counsel for the appellee will not be able to join us, and so we would welcome oral argument from the appellant's counsel. So if we're ready.
You're going to introduce us?
That's true. I'm sorry. I'm so thrown.
We don't even know who we are.
Yes, exactly. I will introduce the panel that we have here today. To my left is Justice Mike Wallach. To my right is Justice Wade Birdwell, and I'm Elizabeth Kerr. So with that, I will ask the clerk to call the case.
The court will now call Eckert Youth Alternatives Incorporated et al.
All right. I assume you don't need your 5 minutes of rebuttal time under the circumstances, but you are welcome to come to the podium and present your argument.
Your Honors, may it please the Court. Today I'm here on behalf of my client, Eckert Connects. This case is complex given the facts and circumstances. However, it can be broken down into an if-then analogy for Your Honors. If providing records to the Pytels in this case was a state contractual obligation, but the state failed to do so, and the state cannot be sued for this same violation, then it stands to reason that that same immunity should be extended to Eckert.
Does it make any difference, counsel, that, as I understand it, the Pytels are complaining not only about not getting the full records, but also some sort of representations made by Ms. Taylor?
The malfeasance aspect. So with regard to the jurisdictional analysis that we're here to talk about today, it's a little bit different. If the state was obligated to fulfill those functions and Eckert acted at the direction of the state, then it stands to reason that Eckert should receive the sovereign immunity of the state. So with regard to Your Honor's question, the Pytels are unable to show that there is contractual language or some form of directive from the state requiring Eckert to produce the records that are at issue. So the state is always the central repository for the records of every child. If the state, for whatever reason, did not want those records to go to the families, then it would not have placed those records into the HESIC file, which it gives to Eckert to give the family the records. So the records that Eckert receives to give to the families first come from the state. Eckert does not have the independent discretionary authority to remove documents, to add documents. It is the state's responsibility to go through all the records on a child because the state is going to be the custodian of those records. It's not Eckert's independent contractual or verbal agreed responsibility to do so.
Well, this is probably goes to the merits rather than anything else, but I'm just curious. When Mrs. Pytel went back to talk to Ms. Taylor, didn't Ms. Taylor actually go to her file cabinet and actually had the records that the Pytels are claiming had not been given to them from the Cook children's admission?
So correct. That's what Miss Pytel claimed, and Julia Taylor did recall that that happened. But as I said, the fact that Eckert may have records does not authorize them to provide those records to the families without express authorization from the state. So if the state wanted the families to have those records, I will direct Your Honors to the contractual language in the In-State Adoption Services Agreement, which is one of the two agreements that are at issue today. One of the agreements was signed between the Pytels and the Department of Family and Protective Services.
The agreement that was produced at the trial court that was not in effect at the time?
Correct. However,
how can we look at something that wasn't in effect at the time?
So with regard to Your Honor's question, this is a standard form. It's
all we know is that what was there and what was introduced doesn't apply to this event.
So I believe that what that record was depicting was the Pytels' second adoption. The Pytels have adopted two children through Eckerd, and I think that we had their second adoption contract on file in the place of HM's adoption file. So I think that that is the issue. It's not that it's not the Pytels' signature. I think that it's not applicable to this particular child, but it is the same agreement, and Mrs. Pytel testified as much in her deposition.
But we don't have Mrs. Pytel's deposition in the clerk's record.
Okay, I see.
I mean, in fact, I was going to ask, you know, both sides about the appendix items that have been attached to the respective briefs here that weren't really in the clerk's record. So I'm not sure how we can consider even the ones that were attached to the brief that do seem to go back to the date, whatever forms were in effect as of the date of HM's adoption. So,
well, if I could address that issue,
sure.
Even putting that contract aside that's between DFPS and the Pytels, the contract between Eckerd and DFPS specifically states the contractor will provide the adoptive family the child's de-identified health, social, educational, and genetic history reports, which is the HESIC, and case record received from the DFPS caseworker. Eckerd cannot independently produce records to a family unless they were first from DFPS. So even if Eckerd acquires records on a child, they're not necessarily applicable to be distributed to the family until DFPS gives the okay.
What evidence is in the record that the documents concerning the mental health diagnosis of this child that were not produced were actually somehow not received from the state?
Well, exactly, Your Honor. That is the issue. The Pytels are claiming they never received these documents. Julia Taylor is claiming that they were made aware of these documents. However, the nature of the HESIG, Julia Taylor was required to go through it, but not to the degree that the Pytels were. And there's only one copy of the HESIG, and the Pytels have it. There's also a copy, actually, that's on file with the court, but it's sealed because of privacy issues. So the Pytels can claim that they never received these records, but they're not able to prove one way or another whether they did or not.
Just point of clarification, Eckerd is a licensed child placing agency, is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And as a licensed child placing agency, do they limit their placements solely to DFPS children, or are they also licensed to do private or other placements? Is that correct?
Your Honor, Eckerd works exclusively with DFPS. The only children that Eckerd has ever worked with are those that are in the state's custody and have been removed from their family home due to abuse and neglect, which is documented with the state.
Is that in the record somewhere that they exclusively work with?
It is. It's in our, I believe I put it in our trial court plea to the jurisdiction, so it'll be in the clerk's record. I can find it for Your Honor.
I mean, is there an attachment to your plea to the jurisdiction that would show that, or is that just something that was asserted in the plea?
I cannot recall if I specifically stated it in the plea to the jurisdiction, in the appellant's brief, but it is in our plea to the jurisdiction. And
I ask, counsel, is because your briefing makes a big deal about the fact that the federal government requires the state to do certain things with regard to child placement, particularly to give these histories, the HISIG or whatever, however you want to pronounce that, okay? But that's not unique to children who are in the custody of the state. That also applies to private placements as well. Because a licensed child placing agency isn't limited to children who are in the custody of the state. They also are licensed for purposes of doing other placements, and they have independent duties with regard to HISIGs. Those HISIGs are due in private adoptions as well, as opposed to just the state. So the HSIG and the duty of disclosure of those documents is not uniquely governmental. It depends upon whether or not the child is a part, is within the custody of the state, as opposed to a private custody situation. Is that not correct?
Your Honor, based on my understanding of the case law, the entities that prescribed to this in-service adoption agreement between DFPS and the CPA, the Child Placing Agency, those entities are solely working with the state of Texas.
Okay, but they're also identified as independent contractors with regard to that, and i.e. effectively independently licensed child placing agencies with independent duties that are not necessarily a part of the contract. They have that duty based upon their licensure. And the fact that DFPS does the licensure in addition to the custodial stuff doesn't mean they don't have an independent duty.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, with regard to this conduct that the plaintiffs have alleged Eckerd failed to perform, that is a state agency requirement. That's a government responsibility. I know that Your Honor said that we would leave this contract aside that was the Pytel's contract, which I know it does not, there's no proof of it in the record, but every family is required to sign this contract before they can adopt a child that's in the state's custody.
Okay, and now you're also arguing that this is purely ministerial, in the shoes of the state, et cetera. And if, in fact, everything that had been produced to Eckerd by the state had been produced to the Pytels, then that would have just been a pass-along, which could be characterized as ministerial. But the allegation here is that information that was available from the state to Eckerd had been withheld, and therefore the choice to withhold seems to me to be a discretionary matter.
Yes, Your Honor. The way the plaintiffs have presented it, it does appear to be a discretionary manner on behalf of Eckerd. But when we look at the contract languages of the two operative contracts, it actually is the sole responsibility of the state to make sure that those records are given to the child placing agency. Plaintiffs claim that for whatever reason, Eckerd's staff decided to hold back documents, but there's no showing that that actually occurred. Just because Eckerd had these documents doesn't mean that it took them from the HSIG file that was given to it, which it has to, by contract and by state law, present to adoptive families.
But doesn't that get us back to sort of the issue that when you're talking about the arrangements that Eckerd has, or any independent contractor in Eckerd's position has with DFPS, the only thing that we actually have in our record is one that's dated like 2018, 2017. So, I mean, how do we know that the terms are the same, were the same back in 2016?
That's a fair point, Your Honor. That's a fair point to point out. Regrettably, there's no one at the state or at Eckerd who's able to now speak to this contract. So these terms that I presented to the court are based on my extreme in-depth research of the rights, responsibilities of each party, what everyone has to go through when these adoptions take place. And because these are kids that are in the government's care, there are certain requirements that have to be fulfilled. Yep, and this agreement is one of them.
But in terms of what we can base our decision on, I'm sure you worked hard at trying to uncover everything that you could uncover, but we have to make our decision based upon a record. We can't look at what you put in the appendix because that's not part of the record, and what you have in the record is not what governs this particular adoption. So how are we supposed to reconcile that and come up with what the contract was if we don't have the contract in front of us?
So even without that contract, which binds DFPS and the Pytels together with regard to records provision, if we go to this in-state adoption services agreement, which was in effect at the time of HM's adoption in 2016, Section 2.9.1.3 says that the contractor provides the adoptive family, the HSIG, the reports, and the case record received from the DFPS caseworker. So again, there's no discretion with regard to what Eckerd can and can't do. Once it gets those records, it has to produce them to the family. plaintiffs are utterly unable to show that what was in the HESIG was not given to them. And there's no proof either way except for what's on file at the court, which can never be unsealed because now the Pytels are no longer in privity to do so, nor is Eckerd because he's not in our care.
Let me shift gears for just a second, because in the recent Supreme Court cases dealing with the idea of derivative governmental immunity, there seems to be sort of a policy-based approach that the Supreme Court has at least, I think, expressed some openness to, which is that if you've got a situation where you have an independent contractor that is insured, which I understand Eckerd is, that extending governmental immunity to such an entity wouldn't really make sense because of the idea of the public purse being raided to answer to lawsuits like this. So could you speak to that aspect on the policy?
Yes, Your Honor. That is one consideration that the courts have looked to. I know there's a recent Supreme Court case or Fifth Circuit case that came out, which is addressing that same issue. And it was also an independent contractor. The things that the courts look to is whether the entity is insured, but also whether the entity and other entities similar are going to have to be involved in this litigation, whether that will tie up government resources. And in this case, it definitely would because of the nature of the CPAs with the state.
But that's Fifth Circuit authority?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, and the liability insurance actually is a $300,000 policy.
Yes, Your Honor.
One final question, and that is, in one of the briefs, and I can't remember which one, said that the rights to this child had been terminated vis-a-vis the Pytels. What's in the record with regard to why that happened? Did the state basically say, oops, we made a mistake, and you're no longer responsible for this child, or did they do something that required the state to terminate their rights?
So once a family adopts a child, once they go through all of the procedures that they're required to, the child becomes their child. It gets a social security card. It becomes essentially their biological child. So when the Pytels terminated their parental rights to HM, it was akin to a family having to give up rights to its child because it can't take care of it. So they essentially gave up the child, returned it to the state's care. If you will, it's an in-depth process.
All righty.
Court proceedings.
All right. Anything further? Well, we appreciate the argument. It's been helpful, and the case is submitted. Thank you very much.
Thank you.